T-minus 96. United Nations Headquarters, Manhattan, New York. As they took their first steps along the media-lined walkway to the building's entrance, Dan and Tara couldn't help but glance towards the deafening crowd. Tara then flinched as she saw a coordinated barrage of eggs suddenly raining towards them, but every single one crashed into an invisible force field a few feet from her face. The broken eggs slid quickly to the ground, as though having collided with a pane of glass. Some of the crowd hollered in amusement, and others turned angrily towards the small group responsible for the missiles, but the fact that no one was awestruck by this remarkable sight only served to highlight how much the world had changed in recent years. It wasn't just that aliens were now known to exist, or even known to have visited Earth. Amid chaotic scenes, one was currently standing at the building's entrance in anticipation of Chief Planetary Liaison Dan McCarthy's arrival, and the nature of humanity's ongoing interaction with its race was the key point of contention responsible for the size of the crowd. The scale of this crowd was truly humbling, unseen on these streets for many years, and the variation of represented viewpoints was immediately evident. Blue t-shirts with splashes of green were visible in huge numbers, signaling the presence of thousands of generally peaceful environmental protesters. Unlike alien-phobic movements of the past, such as the risible and terroristic Geosovs, the loosely defined groupings which composed the broad environmental movement were typically considered to be progressive rather than reactionary, and enjoyed huge support among the young and disenfranchised. While the movement lacked the clear focus of the defunct Now movement that Dan himself had spearheaded in the pre-disclosure days of old, one of the environmentalists' demands rose above all others. The demand that Earth's leaders should immediately cease sending resources to another planet and worry about safeguarding New Kerguelen's environment only once they had united to deal with the multitudinous challenges facing Earth's. Dan often thought to himself that the well-intentioned environmental movement had been hijacked by populist agitators and political opportunists who would have opposed anyone seen to hold power regardless of their intents and actions, but he knew far better than to mention this out loud. The messenger from New Kerguelen, who was waiting patiently at the building's entrance, stood with one hand aloft, holding in place the force field which had spared his human friends blushes. William Godfrey, the political titan currently serving as one of Dan's three deputy planetary liaisons, remained under the covered entrance for fear of falling victim to a so-called green staining stunt. Social media platforms had recently featured countless boasts from individuals insisting that they would somehow evade security measures to pilot a drone and drop green paint on Godfrey from above. This was a move borrowed from the playbook of British protesters who had terrorized him with red paint dropped from blood drones during his controversial first reign as Prime Minister, and a repeat incident was the last thing he wanted. Other recent targets of green staining stunts had included oil executives and congressmen with voting records deemed unacceptably environmentally unfriendly, and Godfrey was loath to become the highest profile victim yet. Many of the youngsters in blue t-shirts saw Dan as a sellout for standing alongside the President Slaters and DPL Godfreys of the world, but this was far from a universal viewpoint, as he was still held in high esteem by the silent but vast majority for all he had done in pursuit of peace on Earth and beyond. In another area of the crowd, a sizable group of counter-protesters held up placards featuring images and slogans supportive of ongoing engagement with the messengers. Many held plain white signs with three bold black words: peaceful, united, prosperous. One far larger banner displayed the words, "Peace and love to our brothers above," with the words accompanied by a huge spray-painted image of the two messengers who had walked openly on Earth and conversed with Dan on multiple occasions. Almost all of these demonstrators were dressed entirely in white, in honor of the seamless tunics worn by the messengers themselves. Dan fought his instinct of waving to this supportive section, following explicit advice from Emma. He greatly missed having her at his side, but was relieved that she was safe at home with their young daughter, Piper, as well as glad to have the next best thing in the form of his sister-in-law, Tara. A young model turned fashion designer may not have been anyone's obvious choice for an interplanetary diplomat, as Tara was first to admit, but after falling into the role by accident, she had stepped up to directly ensure peace on two planets by convincing the messengers of the right course of action in a blunt manner that Dan hadn't considered. And while she was revered for this on Earth, a people's princess of sorts in the eyes of all but the anti-cooperation protesters, it was on New Kerguelen where Terra, like Dan, was admired most of all. Dan didn't know whether the police had done a good job of corralling the groups or if their divisions had emerged naturally, but the blue-shirted environmentalists and white-clad messenger supporters were neatly organized with the third and final group gathered slightly less neatly in the middle. Rather than opposing Earth's assistance of the messengers, these ununiformed protesters feared the messengers, and their telepathic and telekinetic abilities in particular. Now that their eggs had been thrown, everyone in this section held their hands up in the air with their middle fingers touching their thumbs and their index fingers extended. This was a reference to the activation gesture they had seen Dan himself use in the brief period when he had been endowed with the messenger's so-called uplift powers. These protesters feared that political cooperation with the messengers would ultimately leave Earth's governments with the power to mentally eavesdrop on their citizens, and Dan recognized this as a valid concern. The only reason it didn't also concern him was that he truly knew the messengers and trusted their judgment. He knew they would never use the powers irresponsibly, much less share them with politicians they wisely distrusted as much as he did, and he dearly wished that he was able to convince everyone else of this fact. Somewhat amusingly and entirely without irony, a minority of the people with their hands in the air were wearing bona fide tinfoil hats. Keen to protect themselves from any telepathic intrusions by one of the messenger who remained on Earth as an envoy, these individuals were evidently indifferent to how crazy they looked to the vast majority. The tinfoil hats were mercifully few and far between, at least, with the other alien-wearing protesters tending to be the most vocal in their ridicule of the hat wearers and often keen to point out that the messengers had proven capable of communicating telepathically over great distances and through far greater obstructions than a thin piece of metal. Having seen enough of the crowd to sense the hugely conflicted moods of their constituent groups, Dan and Terra continued forward with their eyes focused on the waiting duo of Godfrey and the alien envoy. As difficult as their day at the UN was going to be, the hostile mood of some elements of the crowd made Dan and Terra keen to get inside and get on with it.
"How the hell did it come to this?" Terra asked.
Dan sighed and encouraged her to keep up the steady walking pace, unable to answer a question that his mind pondered every single day.